The Huddle, powered by Reuben James, Main Street in Burlington. Find them online at rjsburlington.com. Now, here's The Huddle, live on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3 ESPN.com, and streaming worldwide on the 101.3 ESPN app.
Good afternoon. You are in the huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. All accounted for. Brady's here. Rich is here. Artie's here. How you doing, handsome? What's going on today?
It's getting longer every time. Pretty soon, the entire first segment's just going to be, oh, till 20 after.
I'm waiting for my vocal cords to bust. Who has the little Christmas, the Charlie Brown Christmas tree going? I love that thing.
That's our station's little Charlie Brown Christmas tree. I love that. We are set up for the holidays.
It's got one, two, like three branches on it and one ornament. So
that's pretty funny.
I would put another ornament on it, but I'm afraid it would knock it over. So
I think it's perfect in light of what's on the other side of the glass, basically downtown New York City.
Oh, it's unbelievable. We have like one little, I wouldn't even call it a tree. It's
the Charlie Brown tree.
Yeah, it's a branch.
You do know what that tree represents, right? It's the Charlie Brown Christmas tree.
Okay, well, that's what I said.
No, but have you ever seen that show?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
It's a classic.
Have I ever seen that?
We're all going to start singing Hark the Herald Angels Sing again.
Yes.
At the end of the show.
All right, slow down on that. But Charlie Brown Christmas tree.
Okay, Arnie's going to sing.
Maybe Snoopy will have his doghouse all done up in lights.
I love Snoopy. What, are you kidding me? So, yeah, I watch Charlie Brown. What do you think? Don't know what the hell's going on.
I'm so sensitive.
We had our basketball game last night. Brady did show. We did need him because there was another guy on the other team. How tall was the other guy?
He had to have been 6'7" at least.
Was he that tall?
I think so, yeah.
But he was a little awkward.
Well, apparently not by the stats.
Yeah, he scored about 25.
Oh, did he have that many? Did he tear you up like that?
Awkward. What does that make you?
He got to me pretty good on the defensive end. Look, I make no bones about it. I am not an interior defender, but I'm our biggest player, so I had to play down low a little bit.
You're not a defender, period. But anyway, Brady had a good game. Brady, you scored how many, Brady?
I think 12.
12.
12 of 65 or something. We had four guys with about 12, 15.
I had zero.
I thought you had zero points.
Zero points.
All right, so I won the bet.
What, over under two?
I said two.
Yeah, I didn't have a good game.
And you laughed at me when I said two.
Did have a couple of rebounds.
As it turns out, you were right.
Did have a couple of rebounds, knocked the ball away. Steal.
You took a charge.
Oh, that
no,
I
don't think
I'd seen.
Did I take a charge?
Was it from the
6-7 you got the guy. The guy had an offensive foul. That's a charge.
I didn't remember that.
Did somebody gronk you?
You even said it before the show. You're like, oh, Rich, I forced a guy into an offensive foul.
Did I say that before this?
Yes,
and you did.
Okay, well, I'll take credit for it now.
Now, how many shots did you take?
0-for-2. 0-for-2.
You took two shots. How long does this game go?
My teammates won't give me the ball.
I can't imagine why.
I said I need two things. I need more shots and more cowbell, and nobody laughed. They don't even know what that even means, Rich.
You also didn't play that much.
No, I didn't play that much. It was a close game. We were behind most of the time, though.
You out of shape?
No. What bothered me is when I got into the game, we were up by like 20, and then when I got out of the game, 2 minutes later, we were down by four.
So you had a minus 24.
Yeah, pretty much. And I'm like, I can't do that. That's embarrassing.
I didn't sit once the entire game.
No, but we needed the big guys in there. So it was just, first game. I'm sure I'll pick it up.
Minus 24.
It was something like that. Yeah, it was horrible. It was like in 2 minutes, they just took advantage of me. and just abused me out there.
I mean, is this definitely a competitive league
you're
stuck in now?
Oh, yeah. Is it
so
not?
You don't belong there, in other words.
No, there's always like one score. There was a girl playing yesterday.
Well, what does that mean?
Well, not against us.
So what are you saying?
I'm saying a girl played.
The girl is the weakness of the team? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
You said that, Arnie Spanier?
Yeah. Well, does that make me a sexist now?
I'm just trying to set you up for some
I know
phone
you
calls.
Are. I know you are. People are going to get all mad at me.
655-6672.
Anyway, Ozzie went 0-16 last year, so at least we got a win for him this year.
He had a big three yesterday.
Yes, he did. You know what bothered me is he was on my team 2 years ago. They threw me off because we only won six games. And last year when they threw me off, they won zero. So I'm glad. They
you were the difference.
Well, now we're 1-0.
I got a correction real quick.
Okay.
Wait, you have 1 point?
No, a lot of people got mad at me because I said there's no good-looking redheads in the world. I stand corrected.
Yeah. Emma Stone?
No, you had one from Wedding Crashers.
Yeah, I don't know how to say Isla Fisher?
That's good enough.
She's the redhead from Wedding Crashers.
Yes, she's gorgeous. So there is one good-looking redhead.
Intern Devin.
Yes. But so I don't want to be it could be sexual harassment, so slow down on that. But anyway, that is the one good-looking redheaded star. Because usually I said yesterday when we were doing Last Story Standing, that the redheaded people are not good looking.
Right.
Male and female.
You finished the show by just dropping this bomb and then leaving.
Well,
because
we had a story about redheads, how they have superpowers and all that, and they're funnier and this and that. I go, really, they're not very good looking people. And then somebody brought up Prince Harry.
Yeah.
What about
she was redheaded. Hermione from Harry Potter was redheaded.
I'm not a Harry Potter person.
She's redheaded. And Ron Weasley, one of the main characters, he's redheaded.
Are you going to tell me Nicole Kidman is not
attractive? Oh, stop it. Nicole Kidman. I could probably come up with 25,000 women other than her.
Wow.
Nicole Kidman, please.
Are you blind?
Nicole Kidman, stop that.
Come on. Really?
Yeah, I told you.
20 years ago?
I apologize. I gave you the one good-looking redhead, the one from Wedding Crashers. That's it.
Hermione Granger is played by Emma Watson. So there's Emma Watson and Emma Stone, both redheaded.
I think the one I'm thinking about is Emma Stone.
Yes, Emma Stone is the one from Superbad. Yes. She started in and so there's EZA.
Two. All right, so there's two. It's
and
hard.
My ex-wife.
Out of all the women in the world, we found two good-looking redheads, which is two more than I thought we'd find.
Wow.
So there you go. So when I'm wrong, Rich, I'm wrong.
Yeah, I know.
Is there a good-looking guy that's redheaded?
Andy Dalton, Carson Wentz.
What are you going to tell me? Ron Howard next?
Yes, Ron Howard.
Conan O'Brien.
Conan's not a good-looking guy.
Is he redheaded?
He's got a pointy nose.
He's about 9 feet tall.
Stop it. And don't get mad at me. I just got to be honest, you know? Just got
to
be honest.
Coming from you, it's okay to do because you are the, look at you. You're a chiseled
god. Exactly. But we got a lot going on today, Brady, so what's happening, my friend? Go ahead. A
lot of sports to get to. Aaron Boone introduced today in New York. Is it okay for Josh McDaniels to just want to stay a coordinator and not become a head coach? Big guest list, Field Yates, 4:35, Buster Olney, 5 o'clock, Amani Toomer, 5:35. But first, I heard this argument from a listener, and I don't remember if it was on Facebook or on Twitter or on the text line, but I wanted to bring it up. Somebody told us that the Gronk situation could have been avoided if the officials had taken better control of that game. I completely disagree. Do you think that the Gronk incident was because of lack of institutional control by the refs?
I do a little bit because we've said this in basketball. When referees don't call it tight and, they let things get away, next thing you know, there's more pushing, there's more shoving, and we say, the referees let the game get out of hand. Especially in basketball, do we not say something like that?
Oh, absolutely.
Next thing you know, that leads to fights, and who knows how it spills
over. And I mean, let's connect A and B here. How many times did he say the word frustrated in his post-game press conference and his apology? I mean, he was frustrated. There's nothing he can say to me that's going to make what he did okay, because he had time to think about it, and it was a terrible thing to do, and he got what he deserved. That being said, I don't think that happens if he gets a call or two along the way.
Is there any difference if Tom Brady gets hit and they don't throw a flag? Maybe they go ahead and hit the guy back right there. If they throw a flag, maybe Tom goes, nobody do anything. We just got 15 yards or something.
Well,
you
breathe near Tom Brady and they throw a flag.
You understand what I'm saying.
See, I look at it differently. I guess if you're going to look at it the way you guys are looking at it, maybe you're right. Okay, if Gronk had gotten a call that he wanted earlier in the game, then maybe he's not frustrated and then maybe something doesn't happen. However, when I think about that, I think of general... I just keep going back to Odell Beckham Jr. and Josh Norman. Odell Beckham Jr. and Josh Norman get to the point where Beckham is ready to spear Norman and tries to, because they had gotten between them 5 unnecessary roughness and personal foul calls throughout the course of the game, and neither one of them had been ejected to that point. So it had been building, 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 physical aggression building all game. That wasn't the case in this game. Gronk wasn't in scuffles after plays. They weren't in each other's huddles. They weren't barking with each other. I thought that this was an isolated incident in the game. It was a wrong incident, but it was an isolated action. Gronk hadn't been physical with anybody throughout the game.
No, and I think what it came down to is not just that game, and I think he made that fairly clear afterwards, too. It's been building with him for a very long time. I mean, those of us that watch Patriots games every minute of every game every year have been seeing this for years. I mean, and we saw what did he get? He got 2 calls, one of which cost him at the time that seemed like a very big first down when the game was close. On a play, the guy barely breathed near him, and they called a flag for offensive interference. I think it's been building for more than just last Sunday. I think this is something that's been going on for a couple of years with him.
All right, if you want to get into the Town Fair Tire text line, 802-655-6672. That's 802-655-6672. Rich, turn your damn computer off for crying out loud.
What? Everybody's pointing at me.
You know what I was going
to... I don't hear anything.
Yeah, I can't believe I can't remember his name. The guy from Duke, the basketball player. Brady.
Grayson Allen?
Yeah, Grayson Allen. I'm sorry. Okay. I can't believe I could remember his name.
That's how it goes.
How many times has that guy got frustrated, and because he was frustrated that he didn't get a call, what has he done over the last year or two? He's tripped players.
Yeah.
He's pushed players. All, and he doesn't do that if the referees give them a call. Now, he shouldn't be doing that, but Brady, you've seen what he's done to retaliate because the referees have not been on his side.
Right, and I think we're talking about different things. When I hear the refs could have gotten the situation under control better, I think about, like think about baseball, okay? The Red Sox and Orioles get into this beanball battle because umpires didn't stop it 3 games ago. And I think about how it built and built and built until eventually we reach a point where Chris Sale's throwing behind Manny Machado on the first pitch of the game or on the first pitch of the at-bat, and we're thinking, man, this has been building for a while. The referees in this game did nothing to there was no other physical altercations throughout the game. This wasn't building. You can say if the referees had made a call, then maybe Gronk would have been frustrated, and that's fine. But when I think of the question, did the referees fail in their job here to keep control of the game, I would think this means there's been repeated fights throughout the game and nothing has happened. No one's been that wasn't the case.
Eric and Barry said there were two holds and a pass interference call on the play that Gronk ended up getting suspended for.
Yes.
suspended for that wasn't called for. Right. I would be frustrated too, Eric, from Barry.
Right.
So, yeah, there was a lot of...
He's absolutely right. And that lack of a call on that particular play cost them an interception. But the other thing that we haven't talked much about, and I mentioned it right after, is the fact... I mean, it cost him an interception late in the game. Am I wrong?
No, but
it did.
Would Gronk have done that BS if this was in the Super Bowl? No.
No, he wouldn't have. That wouldn't have happened.
He would have been smarter than
that. Right. And the fact, you know, I keep saying that he's got to be smarter than that when it's 23-3 and something doesn't go his way. His team was winning by 20. It was late in the game. The game was completely under control, and he still lost his cool like that. But at the same time, maybe that's part of the reason why it happened, because he felt like, okay, we're up. This game's in hand. I'm going to get thrown out. I have a second to think about this.
Right.
I'm just going to jump on the guy.
I understand people saying that that Gronk's frustrated by it, but that's still no excuse. I think we're all in that boat together on this. But you're not going to get every call. You shouldn't need every call. And the Patriots evidently didn't need every call because they were up 23-3. That frustration doesn't excuse what he did. The referees did nothing wrong outside of maybe missing some calls. And that's going to happen. Not everybody gets every call that they want or feel they deserve, and everybody knows that going into games. Gronk acted like, I keep going back to Beckham Norman, where there's 5 personal fouls between the two of them. You saw it coming from a mile away. The referees could have gotten rid of them earlier in the game, and they didn't, and that's why it exploded in the fourth quarter. This wasn't that. This was Gronk acting alone on his own, and the referees had nothing to do with those actions.
And I wish he had shut up about that as his reason on the post game, the apology. It was all he did was talk about, I'm tired of the bad refs. I'm tired of being pushed around. I'm tired of not getting the calls. And meanwhile, he just stuck his elbow in the back of a guy's head, gave him a concussion, and is about to get a suspension at the time.
So I just
think he should have not necessarily focused on all of his frustrations. We know he did it out of frustration. It's enough to tell us.
If you want to get in the Town Fair Tire text line, 802-655-6672. I couldn't believe today all the ex-football players saying it was one of the cheapest shots they've ever seen in football.
Really?
Oh, I laughed.
Anybody ever watch Jack Tatum?
Oh, I'll beat you. I'll one up you on that and raise you with a Conrad Dobler.
Ugh.
All right, yeah. So Conrad Dobler was known. I don't know if you know him, Brady. He was known as the dirtiest man in football ever.
Yep.
There's no debate on that one.
He was terrifying.
Terrifying. Oh, someone said Bill.
Bill Romanowski?
He made Bill Romanowski look like a Girl Scout, for crying out loud. I'm serious. Conrad Dobler, the worst human being on the face of the earth. So you didn't want to go ahead and get on his. But, I mean, that's what they did back then. You know, that he had plenty of cheap shots. I'm surprised that so many people got on Gronk over this.
No, it's so funny, too, because I look back as an older guy, and Arnie, you can relate as an old fart, too. But the old Oakland Raiders, remember how they were so respected for their big hits?
Yeah,
Atkinson.
Yeah.
And Tatum.
Davidson,
and
all those
all
big
those
guys. Yeah.
Nasty guys. And the dirtier and nastier the hit was, the more excited people would get about it. Now you do that and you're practically in jail.
Breaking news, Roger Goodell reaches a new extension with the NFL. He's going to be the commissioner through 2024. Next year, he's going to make $40 million, which,
yeah,
guess what, is as much as Odell Beckham Jr., Tom Brady, Deshaun Watson, Carson Wentz, and Russell Wilson combined.
How do I get a job like
absolutely
that?
Absolutely absurd. Did he get his private jet?
Have not seen the details.
Let that be a lesson to the interns that we have here, because Roger Goodell was an intern. You know that, don't you?
I did not.
You
he
didn't know that?
Now.
He was an intern to, what was the prior commissioner?
The
Paul Tagliabue.
Yeah, he was a commissioner to Tagliabue. I mean, an intern. Excuse me, that committee. He was an intern.
Got to start somewhere.
An intern, and now he's making $40 million. I mean, look at what we've done for our interns.
We've gotten him.
Nothing.
Intern Aaron is now part-time employee Aaron.
That's true.
I saw
That's
him
true.
As a receptionist today.
Is he making $40 million?
Intern Caleb is running his station at Western Kentucky and is taking it to new heights.
Wow. So look at that. So we do stuff for people.
Everyone, their goal in life is to be the next Arnie Spanier.
Yeah. But when I interned, I expected $40 million. I just didn't get that. But yeah, no, he did. He started off as an intern. So he's certainly worked his way up. No doubt about that.
Rich, let's get to the Angel Tag program.
Yeah. As once again, 101.3 ESPN's teaming up with the Salvation Army to help make a difference this Christmas. We've been getting, this is what, day three for this week, obviously, being a Wednesday. We've had so many calls, so many tweets, so much response to this, and we thank you all very much. Yep. Who's next up as we're supporting children who are served by the Salvation Army in Burlington, local kids who may otherwise go with nothing under the tree? I can't imagine anything worse for this Christmas. And every single day during the huddle, including right now, what we're doing is sharing the wish list of children on the air. Helping could not be any easier. All you have to do to get a hold of us when there's a child's need you'd like to fulfill is give us a call at 655-6672. You can also text the studio at that number as well. We have a 12-year-old boy who wants a scooter, Legos.
Again.
Legos. Everybody wants Legos. And he wants a bike helmet. It says bike / helmet. Does that mean he wants a bike and a helmet?
Yes.
He wants a bike and a helmet. Of course he does.
You don't have to get everything on the list. However you can help out, just give us a text or give us a call. Save number 802-655-667.
And here's a new one, a Bluetooth speaker. The hell is that?
It means it's a speaker that you can play music from that doesn't need to be plugged in and attached to things.
Oh, okay. And a Skylander.
All right.
That I don't know what
I don't know what that is either.
All right, but you get the idea. Give us a call if you can help. And do your heart some good here. 655-6672.
And we have other Angel Tags also for kids. Some kids need clothes, books, all kinds of stuff. So give the people a call right now, and they'll go and answer. Our interns will answer the phone. I feel like I'm doing a telethon. 802-655-6672. Brady, what's coming up next?
Coming up next, Aaron Boone introduces the newest manager of the Yankees. What exactly did he have to say at his press conference, and what do we think?
Yeah, I'm not very impressed, but we'll get to that, Rich.
By the way, Christmas Foods for Kids is brought to you by Shearer Chevrolet Buick GMC Cadillac Shelburne Road, South Burlington, and online at ShearerVT.com. Save time, save money with Sure.
And you can also drop off unwrapped toys at any of the Lenny's locations, Plattsburgh, Williston, they're in Barry and St. Albans.
And the best text we have ever had, intern Logan, striving to be the next Arnie. So I want you to know that, to go ahead and get that done. We'll come back. Lots coming up more. We'll get to the Yankees. They introduce Aaron Boone, Bob Boone, anybody named
Bob
Boone. Can you give me another Boone? Can you give me another Boone?
Brett Boone. Ray Boone?
Sure. Brett Boone.
Ray Boone?
What was the singer?
Oh, Ray Boone was Bob Boone's father.
Yes. Who was the singer?
Boone.
Pat Boone.
And Daniel
Boone.
His daughter.
What about Daniel Boone?
Yes, remember Debbie Boone? You Light Up My
Debbie
Life.
Debbie Boone.
One of the worst songs ever.
How many Boones can we get to? That's coming up next right here, 101.3 ESPN.
Back to the huddle, where you can give us your take at 802-655-6672. Providing Arnie shuts up long enough to let you get a sentence in. 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You are in the huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. We got Field Yates coming up in about 14 minutes from now. You're not going to want to miss it. Our NFL insider from ESPN. Real quick, before you get to Boone and the Yankees, I'm just wondering, what kind of coach do you like that takes over? Because I forgot who took over in football. I forgot what program he took over, and he told the kids on his first day, everybody find out what ring size you wear because we're winning a championship.
It's like Rex Ryan. Playoffs, yeah, yeah. We're going.
Do you like that, or do you like a coach when he comes in and he's a little bit more realistic? Like, you know, what do you I don't know. When you come in to, like, take over Rutgers, you say, get your ring size. Get out of here, coach, you idiot.
I guess I'd find that motivating. I mean, I had a basketball coach that was like that in high school. I mean, I think we won four games in my 3 years of varsity basketball. But he's trying to plant the seeds of developing that mentality right out of the gate.
I don't know. Maybe it's better to say, look, we're going to lose by 50. Let's see if we can just lose by 30. You know, let's just try to cut it down, not lose by that much.
Now, I like a coach who talks about coming in and connecting with the players and building relationships, which is a lot of what Boone did today. But I like that kind of messaging.
That's like that, huh?
It's like the Geico ad where I think we talked about this, but where the coach comes in and he says, I booked plane tickets for the championship.
Oh, yeah.
Then they come back with their heads down after a loss.
That is. I like that. That is funny. All right, let's get to the press conference. On Aaron Boone. So where's first up there?
Well, first off, I want to talk about it for a second, and then I'll play some of the bits. I had two reactions. One, I liked a lot of what Boone had to say, but two, I was amazed. For an organization that prides itself on being first class, and for an organization that does such a good job with ceremonies and honoring, the press conference was amazingly disorganized. I mean, everything from Hal Steinbrenner didn't smile for the photo with Boone. He didn't hold up the jersey with Boone, whereas Boone and Cashman are trying to hand it to him to hold. He didn't. They didn't come and reset the microphone height. Like, you have the guy who does the intro, like, hey, I'm so-and-so from the Yankees. We're here to welcome Aaron Boone. And then they give it to Cashman, and Cashman is significantly shorter than Boone, but the microphone height stayed the same. So Boone is leaning down over the podium to talk. He's got like his elbows on it like he's in third grade because it's so much shorter than him.
Is this Hal's first hire, right?
He
didn't hire Girardi.
No, he did not hire Girardi.
I don't think he did.
No, he did not hire Girardi.
Even if George was still alive, Hal took over late in George's years, but I don't think he...
It was like 2010, 11 or something.
It was his first hire.
And they could have also maybe gotten a shirt, the number 17 shirt that he could actually put on, and that it would fit him. He had a hell of a time getting the shirt over himself.
And they didn't help him put it on. Like, it felt much more professionally done when Alex Cora got to be introed in Boston. So, I mean, that's kind of the sideshow stuff, but I was really unimpressed with how the Yankees handled the whole press conference. As far as what Boone said, he talked for about 40 minutes, and he answered questions, and he did a speech at the beginning. What I liked that Brian Cashman said, I know people are wondering how we hired a guy with no managerial experience, and Cashman, I thought, brought up a good story where I got hired as the GM of this team with no general manager experience, and people went off other people's words and recommendations. He goes, I tried to reflect on that during this process, and that's part of the reason why I was comfortable bringing in a guy with no coaching experience. I thought that was a good story. Other things that Boone said, we'll get to some of that. Here he talked about how I overcome the lack of managerial experience or even professional coaching experience.
It starts obviously with a relationship, but that's a respect you earn. And hopefully, I think in short order, I'll be able to earn that respect. You know, that they'll be able to look in me, at me, trust in me, know that, you know, I have their interests at heart, but know that hopefully I know what the heck I'm talking about. And that's something that you have to earn over the initial days in spring training, in the season. I'm certainly confident in my ability and the fact that that will happen, but that's something that's earned. And, you know, big league players are great at understanding who's for real or not. And I'd like to think that they'll know that in very short order.
Oh, I've watched that movie. That's Miracle, right? Oh, that's Aaron Boone. My bad. What movie did he steal that out of? Oh,
wait a minute for the Gipper.
Yeah, I was ready. Let's do it, guys. Let's run out there. Did he steal that from somebody else? Did he YouTube it? Like, you know, I don't know. Because that sounded awful lot familiar, like somebody else's speech.
I think that Boone said a lot of the right things, but for a guy who I was told was a great communicator, he didn't seem to have a whole lot of personality in this. In this press conference. And again, I think he said the right things. I liked the messaging. But I think for a guy who I was told was charismatic and had that it factor that blew them away, yeah, 8 years removed from the game, I didn't get that. When I heard Alex Cora talk, I felt fun. I felt that vibe. I felt, you know, I felt like he had a lot of personality. And Boone, I felt, was not going through the motions. That's wrong, because I think what he said was genuine. But I didn't feel like a lot of pizzazz behind it.
And the pressure is going to be on him also, not just because he's the manager of the New York Yankees, but because he is expected to be a good communicator. We heard his voice today go up to that microphone. We knew exactly what he sounded like. Yeah, we knew it because he's full of personality when he's doing the baseball broadcasts on ESPN. We know where he's coming from, and I think there's going to be some pressure on him to communicate well in front of a bunch of pit bulls that is the New York media.
This is my point. Remember when a high-profile job used to request to get a high-profile player? I mean, take the Lakers. Now you got Luke Walton, who's, what, 30-something years old? He's no, you know, Pat Riley. You know, he's no, you know, somebody like that. You got Boone for the Yankees. Are you kidding me? We had Billy Martin back in the day. Where's the, I don't know. You know what I'm saying, Rich? You hear what I'm saying?
For a more fiery kind of guy for the Yankees.
Not fiery, but people with, I don't want to say integrity, but people with years and experience.
You're wrong.
I'm wrong. Look, Walton Young, Corey Young, Boone Young, and these are not starter jobs out there. Go ahead, Brady.
You're wrong, I think, in that I've always felt, and you could point to example after example of this, where a lot of guys that go into coaching are better coaches than they were players. They think the game better than they could actually execute the game. I would argue that Boone is one of the more accomplished players that's become a manager. I mean, look at Scott Servais, the manager of the Mariners. Could you tell me what teams he played for? Mike Matheny was an average player at the major league level, and he's become, you know, a successful manager. And then look at the high profile Jordan, Isaiah Thomas, Larry Bird. They've been all middling coaches or executives.
Well, the one thing about Boone, he certainly got the lineage, though. I mean, Bob Boone was one of the greatest defensive catchers of my childhood, certainly. And his father, Ray, was, I mean, it goes on and on. So the bloodlines are certainly there. But if you, I understand what you're saying, but
which means nothing.
If you had told me 5 years ago, 6, 7 years ago, whenever they hired Farrell for the Red Sox, that in the case of the next Yankees manager and the next Red Sox manager, they'd be hired within a month or two, and they would both come in with records of 0-0,
and
I would have laughed at you.
Same thing with Luke Walton, too. When's the last Lakers, Red Sox, Yankees? You're talking 0-0.
But I mean, I'm not looking for Jim Leland to come in and manage one of these teams. I'm not talking about having, you know.
But I got these are not Tony starter. LaRussa. These are not starter jobs. Go ahead, Brady.
The thing that's ironic, Arnie, the thing I find a little hypocritical in what you're saying is yesterday we talked about it for the Giants, and you said you would love a guy like Sean McVay, and he's 31 years old.
I brought his name up in contrast to what I said, but remember what I said? I said I want somebody with experience. I didn't want McDaniels. I want somebody that's been around the block. And then you said, well, McDaniels has been around the block one time. I'm like, I want somebody more established.
People will say, they need a young shot in the arm like McVay. But then people are like, oh, we don't want Boone. So just because McVay's done well, you're able to sit here and say,
right, that's true. No,
that
you're
it's
right
worth.
About that.
Other thing I took away, and I'm going to talk about this in 2 hours on Champlain Valley Game Night also. One of the things I really noticed about Boone is that I think he definitely has he does not want to be known as a one-hit wonder. When they asked him about the swing and the home run, he does not like talking about that clearly. And we always think that somebody doesn't want to be defined by one negative play. Like Buckner's whole career is defined by one negative play. I don't think Boone likes the idea of being defined by one positive
play. That's too bad.
This is part of him talking about the swing and kind of if it helps him with the fan base.
I don't know. I mean, obviously, people know me for that. People have treated me very well when I come back here because of that. Maybe it certainly allows for some good graces to start things off. But, you know, ultimately now I'm going to be judged on my performance. And to me, that performance is, again, impacting players and helping guys take another step and their progression as major league ball players, and in our case, a lot of star ball players.
Oh,
so maybe some good graces to start, and they're familiar with me to some degree, but April will be here soon enough.
Can you not have fun? Is there a rule?
Yeah, but he has
now
to say that.
No, I thought he would say, oh, I watch it every day. I mean, can't you have a little bit of fun? You know what to embrace that? There's a baseball player who's not a Hall of Famer, but a well-known baseball player. I'll give you his name, and his, what he's known for has nothing even to do with baseball. Yeah. Rick Monday.
Yep.
What did he have known for?
He was known for saving the American flag.
Was he not a great baseball? Not a great.
He was a good one.
He was a
good
one.
I mean, Buckner was a great one.
Right, exactly. Well.
Oh, come on.
Well, no,
look at his stats.
Well, don't minimize what Rick Monday's
done. Oh, no. I'm not saying I'm minimizing. I'm just not calling him a Hall of Famer.
No. But sometimes you're defined by one moment of something you've done.
And he grasped onto that.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
But, I mean, you're basically asking Bob Denver to talk about something other than Gilligan.
Yes,
you know, it's just not going to happen.
It's too bad. You made your money. That you got to live with it now. That so what? You've got pigeonholed into that typecast. Fonzie, hey.
It's like,
how about you want to pay me to walk around? Go, hey.
Remember when Marsha Brady, Maureen McCormick, tried to start her country music career?
Marsha.
It's not going to work.
Embrace it. You know, except do all the reunions. Brady Bunch gets married. Brady Bunch gets divorced. Brady Bunch dies. I'd do every one of them until I couldn't get any more money anymore. What are you serious on that? Get out of here! I'd say keep those checks coming. I'll be in the band. I'll do whatever the hell I got to do.
But, I mean, Aaron Boone's in a tougher position. If you're Gilligan and you're 75, you've pretty much seen what's writing your checks. But Aaron Boone would like to think he has a little bit of a future doing something other than being the guy who hit the home run off Wakefield.
Travis and Milton takes me to the task. Pat Riley was 36 years old when he took over the Lakers, and that was his first head coaching job. Turned out okay. Was he taken from the broadcast booth? Was he not?
Is that I don't remember.
I think
Kerr was. I know that.
Well, that doesn't really count. Kerr was a no. Kerr was a player, broadcast general manager.
Oh, right. You're right.
Right. So he did that. But that
he would know that because he's his best friend.
Pat Riley was a player though too. So I don't know if I'm going to go and get into that. We'll come back. Field Yates coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Order only.
The huddle is back. I'm sure you missed us. 101.3 ESPN.
Welcome back. You're in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Let's go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line because on the other end of that line, as he is every week at this time, it's our ESPN NFL insider, Field Yates, who joins us thanks to our friends at Supreme Lending in Essex Junction, qualifying you for loans and first-time home buyers. And you can see if you qualify and go visit online at ownyourhomevt.com. Field, how are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on. And we're into December. Crazy.
Hard.
It's a great time of the year and a lot at stake this time of the year.
Really hard to believe. And Phil, we've talked a lot about the Gronk hit all week, and I guess I'll just ask you for your opinion on how the NFL did with its punishments this weekend. We saw the punishments, that the suspensions that came down from Monday Night Football in Pittsburgh. We see the Gronk suspension. How did the league do as a whole in your mind?
Well, I think that everybody is trying to compare each situation to the other. And if you're doing that, and I understand why you would, then it looks like the NFL may have gotten it wrong. Gronk should be suspended for longer than Juju Smith-Schuster, for example. I think that what's important to note here is the NFL is not comparing these to each other. And I don't want to say the NFL just started cracking down on illegal hits and unnecessary roughness, but this is obviously a different year, a different tenor, a different approach. So I think the NFL, the baseline is still being established. Ultimately, one game for Rob Gronkowski probably is something that I hate to say someone should feel fortunate to receive only one game because it's a suspension, and you should never have put yourself there in the first place with a careless and no place in the game type of hit. But I understand why people are saying they feel as though Gronk's suspension relative to other hits was a lenient one.
Conspiracy theorists out there, I think, say that the Steelers and Patriots are going to play in 2 weeks. The NFL, with its declining ratings and everything, would like both of those teams to be at full strength. Any credence to the idea the NFL only gave Gronk a game because they want him available for Pittsburgh?
Zero. I'll leave it right there.
Okay. I didn't think so either, but Field, you know how people work with this stuff. Everything's always coming from a different angle than we think it is.
Yeah, I think fantasy lands are, I play fantasy football, but I don't live in fantasy worlds like that. So we can leave the ridiculous question right there.
Field, let's talk about the Josh McDaniels, Tom Brady incident on the sideline. See, I'm in the minority here. I think it's a big deal. I don't like you kind of showing up your, quote, boss that way. A lot of other people giving Brady a free pass is fiery and competitive. Are you on either of those ends, or are you somewhere in the middle?
Yeah, definitely disagree with you on that one. It's much ado about nothing. I mean, listen, I've spent I don't know how many games during my NFL time have I spent on a sideline as part of a team. And this stuff happens. You know, you don't always get caught on camera. It's not always, you know, the NFL frontrunner for MVP and its coordinator. But this stuff happens. And, you know, I co-host Operation Football on Sundays on ESPN Radio alongside Andrew Hawkins, who spent time this offseason with the Patriots, as a member of the Patriots. And his reaction was, after spending time there this offseason, it's the smallest deal it could possibly be. No, again, I see this one very, very differently than you.
Field, let's talk. Let's kind of blend the two big markets here in our market. That would be Giant fans and Patriots fans. Let's kind of blend them together here. The Giants get rid of Ben McAdoo this week. They're going to go through the hiring process, obviously, through the course of the offseason. Josh McDaniels rumored to be an early candidate, and obviously we can't speculate on that. But because of the reverence that Bill Belichick has for his time in New York, could you see him, I don't know, being okay if McDaniels went there because he likes New York?
I think Bill will be happy if any of his coaches get a job as a head coach elsewhere. Like, he's never prevented from somebody from leaving. I think where Bill Belichick is unique is that he has the ability to offer perspective on taking second coaching chances. He himself obviously was fired by the Cleveland Browns and eventually got his second head coaching gig with the Patriots. You know, I get why everybody assumes that coordinators or, you know, quarterback coaches or whatever around the league are going to immediately jump for their next opportunity. But I think they're also more mindful than ever that this league is one of instability at head coaches. I mean, we're talking about potentially, you know, some people believe there could be 6, 7, 8, 9 head coaching changes this offseason. The shelf life for head coaches is not what it may have been at one period in the NFL. I don't want to say that coaches are uninterested in coaching jobs, but I think that coaches also understand, you know, sometimes the bigger picture is important to note, and the grass is not always greener. Would Josh McDaniels be interested in the Giants job? I think so, but is it a slam dunk that he leaves the Patriots this offseason? I don't think so.
Field Yates of ESPN with us as he is every week at this time, thanks to Supreme Lending in Essex Junction. Online, ownyourhomevt.com. Field, we've got Amani Toomer, former Giants wide receiver, on in an hour. I'm going to ask him this, and I'm going to ask you also. Do the Giants need a big name, or do the Giants need a young shot in the arm like Sean McVay out in L.A.?
I don't know if it's either. I there's a lot of like middle ground there, I think. I mean, if I think of big-name head coaching candidates that will be speculated upon this offseason, I assume it's like, you know, John Gruden will be one of them. He's out of coaching, obviously, working for us at ESPN. But, like, who else would be a big name? I'm not, you know, with Nick Saban, is that what we're talking about with a big name?
Yeah, yeah. Bill Cowher, I keep hearing, which surprises me because he's been out in a decade, but he's one people mention.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's either one of them necessarily. I mean, would either work? Sure, but no, I think it's so early to speculate upon where they're going to end up because they've made it pretty clear they want to get the GM settled first. So I think the GM probably dictates which direction they end up going with the head coach.
You know, Field, one more thing on the Giants thing, more just a question for you. People, I think, will say, oh, you couldn't hire a guy like McVay, so young and inexperienced, to be in a big market like New York. But the Yankees just hired Aaron Boone, now your former colleague, a guy with no coaching experience. Do you think maybe we could see a shift in those big markets where it's not as important to have that experience?
I mean, listen, we just saw the end of a 210-game consecutive start streak for Eli Manning, who left Ole Miss as a somewhat understated individual, right?
Yeah.
He's not, you know, like, would he have been what the, you know, I think if you think about a player that's equipped to handle the New York spotlight right away as a quarterback, a young quarterback, you probably think of one that has like a ton of bravado and sort of extroverted disposition. Eli Manning wasn't that. He's handled New York brilliantly. So I don't know that like a coach and his experience is what matters when it comes to being able to handle the New York market. Either you kind of have it or you don't. You know, I happen to think that Aaron Boone will have it. I happen to think, you know, I think we all know that Sean McVay already has it. But I wouldn't be as concerned, you know, like, hey, age does not dictate readiness to handle New York. I think ultimately, as a guy like Aaron Judge showed, it's readiness. It's not age. It's readiness dictates readiness, you know? Whether you're a 23-year-old slugger or a 33-year-old head coach.
field, let's go to the Patriots on the field. They're going to play this week without Rob Gronkowski. They do have an extra day to prepare because they're on Monday Night Football. How do you think the game plan or the offense changes without Gronk?
Yeah, you know, it's hard for me to say that it's going to be just what they did in Tampa Bay when they played without Gronk. That was on a short week back in week five because, well, to be honest, obviously at that point, you know, the offense was in a whole different sort of stratosphere, yeah. Right? Deion Lewis had not emerged. Chris Hogan was still on the field. So I don't know that we'll see Chris Hogan this Monday night. I don't think we will. I think the Patriots will lean heavily on their backfield trio. And maybe James White gets back more involved in the game. He has been somewhat quiet for the Patriots over the past few weeks. I think Deion Lewis and Rex Burkhead continue to do what they do. But I think this Patriots offense probably finds a way. They're not looking past the Dolphins by any stretch. But we also know this is a Dolphins team that, you know, defensively, the Patriots probably still can match up with at a sufficient level.
Field, I brought this point up yesterday, and I want your opinion on it. So I'm watching Le'Veon Bell on Monday Night Football, and I'm thinking to myself how unbelievably special he is and how patient as a runner he is. I feel like I'm seeing a little bit of that patience from Deion Lewis and his continued evolution. Do you see any comparisons there?
Interesting thought. You know, I mean, I would say that Deion Lewis is running really, really well right now. Like, I'm, you know, there are other guys. Alvin Kamara is probably setting the bar right now when it comes to just running the football. But Deion Lewis has been one of the better pure running backs over the past 5, 6, 7 weeks, you know, on a play-by-play basis. You know, the thing about Deion that's so difficult to defend is, you know, Bill Belichick made this point a while back, is, like, he is, like, he may not be tall, he's not small either. You know, he's a big guy.
Yeah.
He's a powerful dude. He runs with, you know, great purpose. But, you know, and seems to have very good vision as well. I would say the word that comes to mind for me with Deion Lewis is determined. He looks like a very determined runner right now, and that's part of the reason why he's been so successful.
Field Yates, ESPN NFL Insider, with us every week at this time. Thanks to Supreme Lending in Essex Junction. Online, ownyourhomevt.com. Field, let's get to rapid fire, and I have to thank you. You told me that my Seahawks wouldn't get whitewashed in Philadelphia. They win by 2 touchdowns. So, Eagles, not as good as we thought. Seahawks, better than we thought, or somewhere in the middle?
You know, I said this about the Seahawks on Monday morning, is we have this urgency to either put finality on stuff or make cast wholesale judgments on things. And I think what the reality is with the Seahawks is they're like that. Like, I'm going to be a year too late to count out the Seahawks. It's just going to be me. And they're tough. They're incredibly resilient. And Russell Wilson is, I would personally say that Carson Wentz and Tom Brady are the two frontrunners for the MVP. But unquestionably, I think Russell Wilson has a chance to play himself into that conversation.
It's funny you bring that up because I do this every time we talk about the MVP. I generally think of MVP as best player. I don't care how your team finishes up. I'm always willing to give it to Mike Trout, even if his team finishes in last place. But if you look at the word valuable and take it for what it means, I think Wilson is the most valuable player because I see that team being, you know, 5-8 if he's not around.
Yeah, Milton, I think the bottom line is people probably would have a lot of the same, I think a lot of people would share that opinion if it was, you know, not Tom Brady in New England or not Carson Wentz in Philadelphia. But, you know, Russell Wilson, he's like, just don't take guys for granted. I understand that the MVP is a single player award, but the reality is there are probably like 3 guys in many years that are absolutely deserving of it. So Russell Wilson, Tom Brady, Carson Wentz, you know, Todd Gurley's been phenomenal this year. Don't take those players for granted.
Thursday night football this week is between the Saints and Falcons. Most meaningful Thursday night game we can remember, it feels like.
It's been a great, certainly is one that has a ton of impact. I mean, you look back on games, it might have a lot to do with the playoff seedings. Like that Philadelphia win over Carolina could loom very large come later on this season. You've had very entertaining games like that San Francisco-LA Rams game all the way back. I believe it was week 3 of the NFL season, but this one feels like, yeah, from a meaning standpoint, it's number one, especially because I believe next week it's Denver and Indianapolis, which has a different feel to it, obviously, for reasons that are very explainable.
Field, what exactly has happened to the Denver Broncos? Is it upper management? Is it just as simple as the quarterback play? Is there something else?
I mean, it definitely starts with quarterback play, but, you know, I don't have a perfect answer. 8 straight losses for a team that after they started 3-1 went into their bye they lost coming out of their bye to a Buffalo Bills team that at that time we still didn't know what they were. I mean, they got demolished at home. I don't have a reason for it. The offense is terrible. The defense has not been as good so far this season. But, you know, like, that defense, I still trust a lot of the pieces in place there for Denver. So, yeah, I think a big pivot off season comes for the Broncos this year. They got to decide on some major things, led by who their quarterback is going forward.
Phil, to get you out of here on this, I used to live in Seattle. I have not lived in Seattle since 95. I have not seen a Seahawks game in person since 1994. I am going to Jacksonville this weekend for Seahawks-Jaguars. Will I see a win?
Wow, that is awesome. That's really cool that you're doing that, first of all. Seriously, like, that's 23 years you haven't been to a game featuring your favorite team. Man, on the spot, I don't know. I don't know. I think it's the game of the week. Well, if I had to pick, I think they win.
All right.
It's going to be really tight.
The Sean Springs throwback Royal Blue jersey is making the appearance this weekend.
You might be the only person in the country wearing that shirt on Sunday.
Field Yates, ESPN NFL Insider. Thanks to Supreme Lending and Essex Junction every week. Own your online at ownyourhomevt.com. Field, thanks so much. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Brady.
Thanks to Field Yates, everybody. But look at Brady and Field Yates. They're like best friends. BFF, oh, yeah. Man, for crying out loud.
Well, they talked 15 minutes every week.
Jeez, that's right. He's commenting on your jersey, your wardrobe. You guys are BFFs. All right.
Travel plans.
We got a lot to get to. We're going to come back. Brady's going to have a Sports Center update. Then right, the Buster only got a lot of baseball stuff to get to as we start off hour number two right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Tomorrow morning. What crazy thing will Arnie say next? Find out now on The Huddle with Rich and Arnie on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You are in The Huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN, 5:02, Rich, on a Wednesday. Got hooped tonight, so.
You just gave the time.
I know, we haven't done that in a year and a half, so
I've
just got to mix it up.
I've heard you actually give the time.
First time in a year and a half. Is that great or what?
Did you
5:02.
I mean, when you started in radio, was time and temperature. So I mean, we're talking late 70s in my case, and yours too.
Then my boss would say, sometimes instead of saying, you know, like 35 past the hour, say 20 till. I go, because the ratings are going to shoot up if you say 20 till. You are a genius.
Or I used to get a lot of this. Say it twice. It's 20 minutes after 5:20 on Big Hits 107.
Oh, stop it. You know,
or you'd get 20 of 5:40.
Real quick, did I tell you what my wife yelled at me about yesterday?
No, your wife yelled at you?
Because I had,
No way.
We have Cheerios, right, in our house. And
Cheerios.
We have the Honey Nut Cheerios, and we have the Wheat Cheerios, and the regular Cheerios. And we mix them in a thing. And I just took out the Honey Nut Cheerios and ate that.
Oh, those are the – what else are you going to eat?
Exactly.
Real Cheerios?
Right. And she got mad at me and started screaming at me, we don't do that in this house. We don't do that in this house.
Have you been with her and she's just telling – couldn't you do that in other houses you've lived in?
I don't know. We have to mix our Cheerios.
No, I'd say it.
God forbid I should have all the Honey Nut Cheerios in one bowl. Instead of mixing up all of them.
I can't think of a cereal that's different, even though it's the same thing, than the difference between Honey Nut Cheerios and regular Cheerios.
Let's go right out to the TikTok Jewers. Guess what? We have to table that cereal talk for
later
on.
Let's ask Buster.
We got ESPN MLB Insider Buster Olney. How you doing, Buster?
I'm doing great. What's going on, guys?
Well, the Yankees, a new manager, press conference. What did you think of it? Really lacked the bells and the whistles. I wasn't inspired by the whole thing, to be honest with you, Buster.
Well, I'm not. What exactly are you looking for out of a managerial press conference?
Some balloons, something to get me excited? I don't know.
Maybe a shirt that fits him.
Well, I was in the room, and I have sort of realized this, that no matter, before we get to play any games, because Aaron is a friend, and, you know, we work together very closely, and a colleague, I'm completely biased. And so anything he does, I'm at this point, I'm like, boy, I thought he was great. And I did. I thought today I was in the room for the press conference, and I thought he was terrific and handled everything and demonstrated, you know, what got the Yankees very excited during his 7 hours of interviews that they went through. They really thought that his depth of knowledge and his even-keeled nature and his open-mindedness came through.
You know, Buster, I was going to ask you, we brought this up earlier. The Lakers, Luke Walton, young guy. You had a little bit of a taste in Golden State. Red Sox, 0-0. Yankees manager, 0-0. Is that just the new wave out there? Is that what's going on? These iconic jobs are just going to guys that played the game but has not managed yet or coached yet?
I think it's just a reflection of the sort of the shift of power from the old guard, field general manager, okay? The Billy Martin, the Earl Weaver, yeah. The guy who was the dominant force in an organization. Those days are long gone, and now the dominant forces are the front offices, and they want someone who they can work with, who will take the information they provide and implement it and use it during the course of the game, and on a daily basis be the face of the franchise. I mentioned to you guys, I think, in the past that I think more and more the job of Major League Manager has become like the White House spokesperson. You're not the president anymore. You're the guy who's representing the team on, twice a day. And probably the most important aspect of a manager's job these days is to work the room, the clubhouse, and to be able to relate to players. And Aaron spoke a lot about that today.
Do you think he has any extra pressure on him seeing what his, that he's been an ESPN and he's been there and he's done that and he understands media roles? Is there more pressure on him to do very well with that as the manager, especially in the number one media market?
He was asked that question today, and he gave an answer which I think is really in keeping with his personality, which was, yeah, I get it. In a lot of respects, there are. I mean, there have been columns written about what a huge risk it is. But he also said, I'm not going to get caught up in that, and he won't. And it has been interesting to read, one columnist said that he's not going to condemn him yet, not going to condemn the hiring yet. And people talking about what a huge risk this is for the Yankees. And again, just as someone who's been around him every day, I can't promise you, no one can promise you if he's actually going to win. But I do think this is that he's evidently qualified for the job, for what the Yankees front office is expecting, which is to handle everything, to be someone who's consistent in his personality and how he applies things. He's very well versed in baseball stuff because he's been doing it since he can remember. As someone who's part of a baseball family, and I forgive me if I made this comparison to you guys last week, but he really does to me the perfect comp for Aaron Boone is Terry Francona, baseball lifer, self-deprecating, very easy manner with people. Gets along with players very well. And I think he's going to do well. But as he said today, ultimately he's going to be judged on his wins and losses.
Buster Olney of ESPN with us. Buster, one of the things I took away from this, and you were there, so tell me if I'm wrong, Aaron Boone definitely does not want to be known as a one-hit wonder. I could tell he did not like talking about his home run in Game 7 and 0-3, and it really seems like he's trying to get away from that and just forge a new identity and not be known for one thing. Did you read it that way?
No, I actually think what he was referring to was, people would say, hey, what a great homer 2003. And Aaron's such a nice person. I think the one part of his personality that sometimes can get lost is how friggin' competitive he is. And the reason why he was uncomfortable with everyone saying, wow, what a great homer to finish off the ALCS that year was, yeah, that's great, but we lost Game 6 of the World Series, and I had to watch the Marlins celebrate on the field.
Yeah.
And as a competitor, I think he was just embarrassed that was something that people talked about in 2003 when he felt like what was probably more integral was the fact that they hadn't taken advantage of the opportunity they had in the World Series.
Buster, you told us that Shohei Ohtani you thought was going to sign with the Yankees, and now he's going to sign with my Mariners potentially. So what do you think? What are you surprised Ohtani said no to Boston, New York right off the bat?
Well, a little clarity here, okay?
I know.
I was telling you what people in the industry thought. And they were shocked the other day when the Yankees and teams in the East Coast were completely shut out of this. And I think they were as equally surprised that, okay, the New York Yankees are not a team being considered, but on the other hand, the San Diego Padres are.
Yeah.
But that really, I think, tells you sort of what a wild card situation this is. Ohtani, as we talked about in the past, he's a real mystery to teams. He's someone who's very much baseball first and devoted to his work. And it may be that in the end, he could choose to go to Seattle. He could choose to go to San Diego. And look, I think Seattle, I mean, they're a team that could, I mean, you may disagree with me, Brady, as a Mariners fan, but I think they'd actually have a chance to win next year, and he certainly would get a lot of attention. But San Diego is probably 5 years away from winning, and if he chooses San Diego in some respects, I bet you there'll be people in baseball that'll say, boy, what a waste. Yeah. You know, nothing against the Padres, but, you know, this guy that everybody's excited about seeing playing, going to a team that probably is not going to be relevant for a few years.
Yeah, I was about to ask you about that. How big can this be? I was in Los Angeles when they had, like, Fernando Mania, which, oh, my goodness, I don't think I've ever seen anything quite like that. That was absolutely insane. Does this have the possibility of something like that or what?
Yeah, I do. I think it does have a possibility of being that big. Now, I've had executives tell me that they think that, you know, going to, for the first time through a 162-game season, that at some point Otani might wave his hands in the air and say, you know what, this is too much, and he'll become a pitcher only as opposed to a pitcher and a hitter. He's perceived to be a better pitcher than he is a hitter, but it will be something new and different, the idea that on a Monday he could throw six scoreless innings and on a Wednesday beat you with you know, three hits and four at-bats. That would be unusual, be something that would get a lot of attention. As I say, I'm sure the one concern in baseball, not a concern, but the where people, when they talk about him possibly signing with the Padres, is that it would get lost a little bit like Mike Trout, but, you know, being the best player in baseball that a lot of people don't even really know that much about because they don't see him play a lot. I am going to be curious, and I've heard this, you're not going to want to hear this, Brady, but today a lot of people wondering if the Angels might actually have a real shot at Otani. And it would be fun to see him playing alongside a future Hall of Famer in Albert Pujols and one of the Inner Circle Hall of Famers in the future, I think Mike Trout.
Buster, I was going to ask you that next. Where does baseball now benefit the most from him playing? In my mind, it's either Seattle or the Angels because I think they need him in the American League. And as crushed as I would be that he could probably beat the Mariners for a decade, having him play alongside Pujols at the end of his career and Trout, that would be good for baseball, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. I think it would be. I think it would draw a lot of attention to the Angels, and that's an organization, a team that continues to get better. I think Billy Epler, their general manager, has done a great job, and he's now positioned them in this Otani thing. And, it, you know, let's face it, if, as much help as you can get for Trout, the better, I think, for baseball. And I agree with you. I think, you know, it also... if he were playing Seattle, it would certainly carry a lot of attention. And some people have thought that maybe baseball would be better served if he went to the Dodgers. I don't think so, especially since I think in the end, Giancarlo Stanton's going to wind up there.
Oh, wow.
So Buster, with Otani the Yankees off of his list, I should say, what does New York go for now? I mean, do they put that money towards CeCe?
Well, I think CeCe will be back there. And Otani, the potential signing of Otani might have been a threat to CeCe coming back. But there's some things to keep in mind here. You know, I talked with a friend of CeCe today, acknowledges that, CeCe understands. He's not in a position to ask for a lot of money. He wants to pitch for the Yankees. The Yankees want him back, but only at the right price. And he thinks they'll work it out. And one thing to keep in mind is that Aaron Boone and CeCe are very close. Mm-hmm. And they really like each other. And so I suspect that'll work out. Look, this is total speculation on my part to this point. I want to make sure I cast it as that. This is not. But as we talk about these Giancarlo Stanton conversations with the Cardinals, with the Giants maybe stalling at some point, you know, there are two teams potentially that could take advantage of it. One, the Dodgers, as we talked about, and I think that's eventually where he's going to wind up. But the Yankees are an interesting alternative if Stanton is willing to play in New York, and we don't know that if that's the case. And there's actually, a nice framework for the two teams to work where the Yankees probably would tell the Marlins, look, we're not going to take the $295 million. You take Jacoby Ellsbury at least some of the money. He waives his no-trade clause with the understanding that as soon as the trade is executed, you guys are going to release him because his part in this trade, like we've seen the NBA trades, is to just even out the money, and the Yankees certainly have some prospects to choose from. And can you imagine the marketing of Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton in the same lineup? Now, again, I'm not telling you that that's happening. I'm just telling you that, the Marlins, who have, in my opinion, really stupidly not engage Stanton throughout this process, probably in the way they should have. At some point, they may be forced to make a difficult choice. Either keep Stanton into 2018 with a $295 million in debt, or make a less than ideal trade, whether it's the Dodgers or the Yankees or some other team. And that's the series of dominoes. I'm kind of going to be curious to see if they fall in the direction of the Dodgers or the Yankees.
Buster, last question on the Marlins and on the Yankees. So we're talking about Derek Jeter. What exactly has he done to his baseball reputation right now? Because it seems to be trending downwards over the last, since he took over in Miami.
Well, and I think it's why, in a lot of cases, I think, it's important to remember that he's not the only one involved in these decisions, right? They have owners there. But there's no question that the perception within the industry is he's off to a very rocky start with how he handled, the departure, the firing of Tony Perez and Andre Dawson, their broadcast team that they had, letting some of those people go, the handling of Stanton, which has just been bizarre, quite frankly. I mean, if you have a player with a full no-trade clause, you got to work through the player. You can't work around the player because ultimately you have to come back to the player. And I've been surprised that Derek, especially as a future Hall of Famer, as a great player himself, wouldn't have had a better feel for that. And it's been surprising. He certainly is going to have time to rebuild, whatever he's lost to this point. But as someone said to me, you only get one chance to make a first impression. And right off the bat, it has not been good.
Yeah. Wow, Buster. Some good stuff out there. How many days till pitchers and catchers report?
I think they said in the press conference, 70 or 71 or something like that?
It was in the 60s, Buster. 69 days away from Yankees, at least.
Only Brady would know something.
I don't know.
Yeah, there you go.
We needed to move quicker.
Buster, always a pleasure, my friend. We love having you on, and have a great week. We'll catch up with you next week.
See you guys.
Take care. Buster only, everybody. Always love having him on. Jeez, 69 days? Is that what it is,
under
Brady?
Under 70. All right.
Wow.
Under 70. Getting there.
God, you guys are getting me so pumped up about Shea. When he said that it could be like a Fernando Mania, you guys were not in Los Angeles for Fernando Mania. To get tickets when Fernando pitched, non-existent. I mean, we're talking about the bleacher seats.
Right.
You could get nothing. That's the cheapest seat in the house. You can't get nothing out there.
Hanging off the scoreboard.
Oh, it was unbelievable. Everybody wanted to see Fernando Mania. It was absolutely incredible, so I'm excited for that. All right, Rich, tell us about the Vermont Teddy Bear Company.
Hold on.
Everybody.
The Golic and Wingo tease, and then we bring in the music, and then we do the read.
Okay, whatever Brady just said.
Okay, how about this?
Tomorrow morning on Golic and Wingo, the local sports talk show. Nothing else comes close. Come to think of it, there isn't anything else. The Huddle, 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in the huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. Thanks to Buster Olney for stopping on by. We got a lot to get to. Great last story standing. Imani Toomer going to join us in about 15 minutes from now. First, Rich, I told you guys about a story I wanted to get to, a girls' high school basketball game in Montana. I want you to read that story.
Well, you know how much I always love to see these kind of scores. Now I can rip into the coach for doing it. But a Northeastern Montana high school girls' basketball team in Great Falls, Montana last weekend, posted a final score of 102-0. 102-0.
This is basketball,
right.
not football, basketball.
Usually when you see like a 100, 100-point win, the other team has 7 or
right,
17.
Right. There was running clock in the second half.
They did not score a single point.
How bad of a coach are you that you can't get your girls to make a bucket? Seriously. No, I'm not talking about the coach that won at 102 points.
You would. You're not blaming the winning coach for winning 102-0.
I'm surprised.
It's disgraceful.
I'm surprised you feel that way because you're Mr. Not everyone deserves a trophy, and let's not all.
Right, but why not win? When you're winning 59-0, why not slow the offense down?
Well, they had running clock. They had running clock.
So what? All the more reason to slow it down.
But that's not going to help the other team score. How do you not have any one girl on your team that you can't score? If I'm the referee, I personally call a foul on purpose just to go ahead and have the other team go to the foul line to make a foul shot.
The Brockton High School team, their coach told the Great Falls Tribune, he usually has 9 or 10 girls available, but due to several reasons, only suited up 5.
Well, too damn bad. You still can't score? You're fired.
They lost to a team called Freud Medicine Lake. 102 to nothing.
If you're on the Freud Medicine Lake team, do you just say, I want my points? Give me the ball.
Give me the ball.
Where's the defense? You played football. What's the worst you ever lost?
Oh, boy. We used to get crushed by a couple of teams on an annual basis. I would say the worst was probably 49-7.
Oh, that's nothing.
Like that.
Brady,
oh, yeah.
You have one that you won or lost, got clobbered? Baseball? Did you say you had like a 22-something game?
The worst I ever lost in baseball was 27-9, but it was 27.
Wow.
Did you pitch?
No, it was 20. It was like 25-3 at one point.
Those
nine were at the end of the game that we scored. Yeah,
and locally, I mean, you've seen, you almost don't want to even say them on the air, but some of these Division IV Vermont girls basketball games and softball, you tend to see, the lower the division tends to be more of the haves and the have-nots.
Yeah.
And you see a lot of, you know, 64-17 kind of scores.
I'm not for the mercy rule because that's the only time I would ever get into a game. I want to get into the game. What, by the way, what's the worst you ever lost? You could text us in 802-655-6672. When I played in high school, we constantly lost by 30, 35
yeah,
points.
Yeah, me too. Well, basketball we did.
Yeah, basketball.
We were hideous in basketball.
But, you know, losing by 30, 35, no big deal.
I mean, hell, they let me play.
Yeah.
My team did the winning most of the time.
Really? You were one of those guys,
won a game was like, I was in like 7th grade. We won a game like 75-12.
Oh, my gosh. Baseball?
No. Oh, baseball.
Oh, my gosh. I'm like, oh, my goodness. Who was benching?
Baseball, we've shelled out a ton of drubbings. There was a mercy rule game, but I know we got up like 14-0 in the first inning once.
Oh.
There was a game, my high school season started yesterday, and I was looking at some of the scores from back home. We're talking about schools where 400 graduates and above in these classes, like these are huge schools. 75-12 was the final of the game yesterday.
If it's 102-0, how bad do you feel after that game that you can't even score one bucket? If you're the other team, don't you at least let them cross half court or no?
Play maybe a little bit of defense to not insult them.
Yeah, let them cross half court.
Yeah.
Play a zone and just keep your hands
up. We don't know that they did.
I find it hard, but you can't score a bucket.
If they're running a full court press up 75-0, then that coach should be instantly fired.
This is why I want a coach. This is why I want to get into coaching here. Give me the worst team in basketball.
Yeah, your team could score like four.
Unbelievable. All right, Brady, what's going on with Josh McDaniels? Is he going to stay with the Patriots, or is he going to get the hell out of here and say, I'm not waiting for Belichick to retire?
Yeah, I was curious about this. When we talked to Field Yates about it an hour ago, when we asked him, you know, what do you think about McDaniels to the Giant rumors? And he said, you know what, I think he would be interested because we don't know that Josh McDaniels has any aspirations to even move up again. Right. And I started thinking, is that okay? We always think about these coordinators, these positional coaches, that all they want to do is move up, move up, move up, move up, move up. Is it okay if a guy breaks the mold and says, you know what, I like being a coordinator? Is that okay? Like, do we look down on a guy who might not have the ambition of moving up?
I do. I look down on somebody
Don't take this wrong, but I've had a lot of people say, you know, over the last 38 years, don't you ever want to move out of Burlington, Vermont in your radio career, make lots of money and be famous? No.
You mean like me?
It's a... Yeah, and have a quarter of a dozen listeners every weekend.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Quarter of a bill.
No,
a bill.
It's to me, and maybe this is the way Josh McDaniels feels, maybe he likes his life winning all these Super Bowl rings as a number two.
See, I would say this. I think that works for McDaniels as long as Brady and Belichick and him are together, because obviously he's developed a comfort level and a familiarity with Brady and with Belichick where things just work, and it's easy to be happy in that. When you're in that comfort zone, if you get to the point where Brady retires and Belichick's gone, I can't see him wanting to be a coordinator anymore. Mm-hmm. Maybe he doesn't want to be a head coach, but I can't see him wanting to be a coordinator under somebody other than Belichick.
Well, and that's the thing. What a perfect position to be in. If he has to wait 3 or 4 years till Brady and Belichick go away, you know what all those years are going to be. They're going to be wins.
Yeah. Well, that's a loser's mentality when you say, I just want to be a coordinator. I don't want to go ahead, you know, have my own program.
How'd that work out
like
for Ben McAdoo?
How about if I just say, you know what, I just want to be a bench warmer. I don't want to get into the game. How about if I had that type of attitude, you know?
The thing I wonder if I'm McDaniels, and again, I would say, and Chris the Mets fan texts in and goes, Brady, I agree with you. Well, I appreciate that.
It happens.
As long as Brady, Belichick, and McDaniels are together, I could see that unit staying in all of their current positions. I wonder if that nucleus breaks up and Belichick and Brady aren't there anymore, I wonder maybe if McDaniels would try to give college a try. I just wonder if that's something he would think about, because in the NFL, he's lived the rat race of a year and a half and fired and then recycled. He could ride his Belichick tie-in, his Brady legacy. He could ride that probably, I would imagine, to a pretty good college job.
If he could get Tom Brady to yell at him, I don't know if he'd be good for the college.
No, but I mean, do you think Calipari wants to leave what he's doing so he could go to the NBA and coach Sacramento or something? I mean, Rick Pitino, look how it worked for him. It was a disaster for the most part. I mean, there are certain situations, and this isn't anything like being an assistant coach wanting a head coaching job. I understand that. But, I mean, there are certain situations where you just become so comfortable that it's good enough.
Yeah, I just wonder. I wonder if when the nucleus breaks up, maybe McDaniels would try college. That would be something that I would think about. If I decided I didn't like the pressure of being an NFL coach or the media attention of being an NFL coach, maybe I go and live in some comfortable, smaller collegiate town where I can be revered and it's not quite as much pressure and you get 5 or 6 years to build something the way you want. Now, I don't know if he has a desire to recruit and work the living room and all that. This is just me wondering. But if it were me and I'm in McDaniel's position, I'd say, look, I don't want to be an NFL head coach, but maybe I do want to be a college head coach.
802-655-6672, Town Fair Tire text line, 802-655-6672. Someone said their freshman year of college is a new texter. They lost their first rugby game 115-30. I don't know how much you score on one of those touchdown things.
I have no idea if that's a blowout. It sounds like
it's called a try, and I believe you get 6 points for it, but okay. I might be mistaken.
Well, that's getting blown out. Here's a guy that says I lost by 75 points. Woodstock versus Bellow Falls JV basketball, 1991.
And I bet he was Bellows Falls, wasn't he? Woodstock's always good at everything.
By the way, he said, I forgot to add that the score was 12-12 after the first quarter. what the heck happened after that? 12-12?
Well, I mean, and in football, the most absurd thing, and not getting off the subject of the Josh McDaniels thing, but the most absurd thing was that just a couple weeks ago I did a game for television on at Middlebury College. It was the North-South All-Star game. And the rules were changed so the game would stay close. So every time, the game was like 48-12 or something. So the South kept scoring touchdowns, and the rule was that they would get the ball back if they were down by 10 points or more. So they just kept scoring touchdowns.
Does this basketball make it take it?
And then the South would get it back, and they just kept scoring and scoring, and the game ended up pretty close.
What does it say? Hey, Arnie, look at Rich. He's a happy guy working where he loves. Is he a loser because he doesn't want to go to ESPN?
Yeah.
Well, he said it, not
damn
me.
Damn right. Who is that person?
You know, Rich, it's interesting that guy brought that up. Are you, let's be honest, if you were you did baseball, would you not do single A, double A? If they said, Rich, you want to do the New York Yankees or the Boston Red Sox?
Damn right I'd go.
Okay, so what the hell are you talking about?
No,
yeah,
but I'm just...
I would call Rich a loser if he said, no, I don't want to do the Red Sox. I just want to stay here in Burlington. I would say, yes, Rich,
you're a loser. Let me specify this. I have never tried to put myself in a position of leaving Burlington. I've never applied for a job in my life. I've never put out a resume.
Yeah.
If a job comes to me that I think might be good for a little while, like last year, go out and live the dream, then damn right I'll think about it.
Yeah,
but it's just, I haven't put myself out there and said, well, this isn't working out anymore. I want to move up, so I'm going to apply at such and such in New York City.
People don't know, may not know this, because I've only told the story like once or twice, Brady, but I know you remember. Tim Neverett, the play-by-play for the Red Sox, I replaced him at the network. He was doing a talk show, right? And he was doing the Las Vegas, whatever the hell
51.
They were called, 51s at the time.
Yeah.
And then he went a long time just doing minor league this, that, and the other until he got the Pittsburgh Pirates and now the Boston Red Sox.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, I'm not denying that if a big job offer came along, I'd consider it. I'm just saying I'm not actively pursuing that because I love it here too much.
Yeah, and that's what we're talking about. We're always under the assumption that everybody wants to move up, move up, move up, move up, get to an end destination, get to a, quote, dream job. Is it okay if for McDaniels the dream job happens to be the offensive coordinator only of the New England Patriots?
What's his motto? The grass isn't always greener?
I mean, Aaron Nakula just said yes yesterday to, what, fifth year in Burlington? You can't tell me he couldn't be doing double A in a heartbeat. He's a great manager, but he loves it here. He's happy. His family likes it, so he stays.
Brady, we got some calls?
Yeah, real quick, because we got to go to break soon, but Brian in Richmond on the biggest win you ever had. Go ahead, Brian.
Brian, talk to us. You're 101.3 ESPN. What's up, Brian?
Hey, Damon, I hope you're well. Okay, I know you were talking about worst losses. I just can't remember any. But one funny story about best wins. When I was in JV in Middlebury, we were beating BSA St. Albans by 60-something. So our coach took mercy on them and put the third-string quarterback and told him to call his own plays. He called a halfback pass, and we scored an 80-yard touchdown.
Oh, no.
Yeah, let's put some trick plays in.
I love that. Yeah. Call your own plays.
Thanks, awesome. Brian.
I love that one.
Hope you are well.
I love it. All right, good story there. We're going to come back. Amani Toomer stops on by. That's coming up next right here on What a What's...
Rich, how do you deal with this guy? It's The Huddle with Rich and Arnie on 101.3 ESPN.
Welcome back. You're in The Huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. I want to get right out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line and find ourselves a guy we have on a lot and a guy who's really pertinent this week. It's former Giants wide receiver and NBC Sports Radio host, which you can listen to 24/7 on the NBC Sports Radio app. It's Amani Toomer. Amani, how are you?
I'm doing great. How about you guys?
Well, appreciate you being with us, especially this week. Pretty tumultuous for the Giants. Your first reaction to just everything that's happened in New York over the last week and a half?
I can't say I'm surprised. I just didn't like the way the whole thing went down. It's one of those things where, you know, there's no real good outcome of this thing. And I think the Giants did the best thing, which was just kind of divorce themselves from the problem, alleviate the confusion and the miscommunication, and try to move forward. And I think that's what they've done. Moving forward was the only way to go. This is never going to be a good situation after Eli's streak was broken.
Let's kind of go piece by piece. What did you think of the decision to bench Eli Manning in the first place?
I didn't disagree with the decision, not because Eli wasn't playing well, because usually when you're a team that's out of the playoffs, you shake things up. And the person who's most comfortable, you usually kind of shake their rattle their cage. But in this case, you kind of, by doing that, you made it seem as though it was Eli's fault. And I didn't think that that was right. There's a lot of people on that team that should have been benched as well. And if that wasn't the case, then you're making it seem like Eli was the sole culprit to why they were, you know, were where they were. And I didn't think that was fair. And then when you tell the Giants fans, oh, you know what, the reason why we're putting in Geno Smith is because he gives us a better opportunity to win than Eli Manning, a two-time Super Bowl champion, you just can't tell people that. I mean, that's just not true. And it even is echoed when the head coach of the Oakland Raiders said the Giants did a big favor by putting in Geno Smith and not Eli Manning. I mean, the opponent that you're playing that week where you bench your quarterback thanks you for benching your quarterback. I mean, that just tells you that around the league it just really wasn't being received. If they would have just said, you know what, we're benching Eli, not because, you know, he's playing poorly, just because we need to shake things up. We want to look at the other players. Just be honest. That would have been a lot. It would have went over a little better, and it would have, it would have made sense to a lot of Giants fans. But the way they did it, and the way they humiliated Eli, I think that was where they really messed up.
Amani, what were your thoughts on Ben McAdoo as a whole?
I thought he was a guy that was a good coordinator, and I don't think he really understood the difference between being a coordinator and a head coach. Coordinators are all about the X's and O's. They have a small group of people to worry about. They don't have to worry about the entire game. They just got to worry about their side of the football. But as a head coach, it's not even really about the X's and O's because your coordinators take care of that. It's about making sure the entirety of the team is running well in terms of everybody's on the same page. You connect with your players and emotionally find out where they are all the time and get them to be at their best. That's the only job that the head coach really has to do. You put a plan in place and you tell your coordinators to perform what you wish, and you make sure all the players can kind of they're buying into the system, and also that they're, you know, they have a vision of where to go. And I don't think Ben McAdoo was still a coordinator and didn't turn the leaf and understand the new nuances of being a head coach.
Imani Toomer with us here on the Huddle, 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com, former Giants wide receiver. Imani, what did you think of the way that John Mara handled this whole situation? We spent all last week ripping Tennessee, the athletic department, for getting rid of Greg Schiano based on what the fans thought. It feels like Mara got rid of McAdoo now because of what the fans thought.
Well, I thought it was they were going to get rid of him anyway after that, after how badly the whole thing was handled. And there was miscommunication between the owner and the head coach. And I think there was some things said by the head coach that the owner found out to be not as truthful as he would liked it to be. And I think with three of the last four home games being at home, there's no way that they could have brought Ben McAdoo back to the stadium and had for 3 weeks and had the Giant fans not really reacted. And Giants fans are they already had a billboard on Route 3 condemning the way in which the thing was handled. And also, there was plans of, protest on the sideline. There was plans on planes flying over the stadium. And when those types of things happen, it comes a distraction, and you know what? It's just time to move on. And there's no better time than right now just to kind of, the Giants fans have already suffered enough this season. I think they want to just kind of move on and have at least something to look forward to next year.
Imani, when you think about the Giants' next head coach, what do you want? Do you want a guy, big name, a guy who has NFL head coaching experience, or do you want a young shot in the arm like there is out there in Los Angeles with Sean McVay?
I want a Sean McVay. I think that the whole organization needs a shot in the arm. I think it's a tough job for a McVay, though. Like, I don't know if he would have been, being in L.A. where a team where, an expansion team where nobody really cares about them, to being in New York and being with the Giants is a totally different animal. I just want somebody who can speak to the media honestly and isn't afraid of what he's saying, knows how to speak in front of the media. I think that was one of the major problems. When he started breaking down we're going to break down the film, I got to check the tape, that just infuriates people, especially people around here. They understand, when they're being hustled. And you can't hustle New Yorkers consistently, week in after week, after that poor play. It just doesn't go over well.
Imani, it's Giants country up here, but it's also New England Patriots country, so I'll ask you about the big Pat story of the week. What did you think of the hit on from Rob Gronkowski on Tre'Davious White?
I think it was one of the dirtiest plays I've seen. I don't mean to jump on it. I just thought that, everybody gets held. Everybody gets frustrated, but you can't act like a baby. And I mean, that was just such a dangerous play. I mean, the guy's not even, when you went in a boxers, when they get knocked out, it's always the punch that they don't see, right?
Yeah.
And Tre'Davious White was on the ground, and he wasn't even looking to get jumped on by a 270-pound guy. And I just thought that that's a really bad look. I think it's one of the worst things I've seen. At least when AJ Green was fighting, at least they both knew that they were fighting. At least when Mike Evans got into it with Lattimore, at least Lattimore was like, he was standing up and he was kind of ready for it a little bit. This was a thing that was just, I don't know, that was just dirty beyond dirty. And I can't believe that people are giving him a pass just because he's apologizing. I think if anybody else did it, it would be a much bigger issue than with Gronk. People just count it off as Gronk being Gronk, and I totally disagree with that.
I think
it's just the player being a dirty thug.
I agree. I thought it was a dirty play. Imani, we'll get you out of here real quick. As a wide receiver who was a pretty good blocker in your own right, what did you think of the Juju Smith-Schuster blindside block on Vontaze Burfict? Dirty or not dirty?
I think it was dirty because, weighs a quarter of what Vontaze Burfict. Vontaze Burfict is knocking people out, not looking for years, and it finally comes back to him. He was suspended earlier this year for knocking somebody out in a preseason game, because he just decided that he wanted to take a cheap shot. And the thing about it is, it's like I said before, you got to be aware when you're on the field, especially when during a play, like the play's still going on, the whistle's not even blowing, and you can't, if you're Vontaze Burfict, you can't complain at all. You just got to take the smell and salts, wake up, go through concussion protocol and say, wow, that's what I do to other people when I cheap shot them. Not to say this is a cheap shot, I just say you got to be careful. You can't be on the football, you know, when they say in boxing, you got to protect yourself at all times. And when you're on a football field, you have to protect yourself at all times. And he didn't do that. And he got caught slipping. That's what I think.
Amani Toomer, former Giants wide receiver, Super Bowl champion, NBC Sports radio host, listen 24/7 on the NBC Sports app. Amani, thanks so much for the perspective. We'll talk to you again.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, there you go, Amani Toomer. And that's what I brought up earlier. People say it was like the dirtiest hit they've ever seen. They've not seen Conrad Dobler then, Rich. And a lot of our listeners don't even know who Conrad Dobler is. There are a lot of young people out there.
Who under 30 would know who he is?
No, you're right about that.
He played for a team that nobody's ever heard of, the St. Louis Cardinals football team. Who else did he play for? Anyway.
I wanted to say the Saints. But Brady, here's a guy that would say he would purposely stand up and pounce on people's legs with cleats on to try to go ahead and try to break it. I mean, he would do stuff like that. I don't know if this is one of the cheapest shots anybody's ever seen. I don't understand how it became that. I don't know if that's the face for cheap shots.
By the way, he did play for the Saints for the last couple of years. Then he went to the Bills for 1 year.
Mostly
the Cardinals.
Yeah, there you go.
The St. Louis Cardinals. Who are they? Is that a baseball team?
Yeah, the football St. Louis Cardinals, my friend. So, all right, we got last story standing. Rob in Plattsburgh wants to know, do we monitor Twitter? Thank you very much. Twitter. And then he goes into this whole rant about McAdoo gone and all that stuff last year. So, maybe they shouldn't have got rid of Coughlin when it was all said and done. Maybe that wasn't a good thing, hindsight being 2020. Come back. Great last story standing. We'll have that next right here on 101. Okay.
Time for one last piece of news gone untouched throughout the show. Wacky or insightful? It's time for Last Story Standing on the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, two stories for Last Story Standing. One Brady gave us earlier. Rafael Palmeiro, 53 years old, last played in 2005. Says he's thinking about making a comeback. At first, I thought, what, was he a manager? He wants to come back and manage? No, he wants to play. He said there's no doubt in his mind that he could do it. 53 years old.
Yeah, but does that surprise you in any way?
Yeah, there's doubt in my mind.
Talk about a guy who had a great career who did not go out on his own terms.
I'm going to wag my finger and say, there's no doubt in my mind. I did not do steroids.
That guy wants to play one more year. He wants to play it clean. And he wants to hit.
Absolutely.
I mean, I know it sounds ridiculous, but it doesn't surprise me.
He's a year younger than me. How are you going to do that, Rafi? How are you going to do that?
You're only 52? I thought you were older than that.
Yeah, no, I'm 54.
I think. Oh, he's a year younger. Never mind.
There you go. All right, give me the other one I gave you. That was a funny one, too. I like this one.
You didn't give me anything.
Yeah, I gave you the one about the police, the lady that went into the police sergeants.
Rich even said, hey, Intern Jordan, Arnie even said, Intern Jordan, can you get this story? You said, Arnie, I can find it. I'm not helpless, and here you are without the story.
It was the one about
basically a woman.
Well, no, I have the story here now. Yeah, woman was going to court. And she parked in the police sergeant's spot while smoking marijuana.
Right.
And she was going to court for marijuana possession.
Right.
So when she was going to court for marijuana possession. When she got to court, she pulled into the police chief's spot and she started smoking more marijuana.
Right. I'm just thinking maybe that's not real smart. Just a wild out there thought.
Does
it say reserved for Chief Jones or
whatever?
Yes,
it says reserved for the police chief. Where's Northport, New York?
I have no idea, and I should know that.
Yeah, well, there you go.
It's north of the port.
Can you imagine, ma'am, what are you doing here? I'm here for a marijuana ticket while I smoke marijuana in the car. Just unbelievable. Some people just have half a brain.
Am I doing something wrong?
Am I doing something wrong, officer? Is this your spot? Because it was wide open. I just wanted to park.
You can't teach that kind of stupidity. You got to be born with it.
Unbelievable. All right, Brady, I'm going to make you stay the full hour. You've been really kind of not doing a lot of stuff around here lately.
Yeah, so we
need you on Champlain Valley Game Night from 6 to 7. What's coming up on Champlain Valley Game Night?
Well, we're going to talk with Stefania Bell, our ESPN NFL insider and injury expert. She'll join us in about 5 minutes from now.
All right, we're getting tons of texts that says, this is the dirtiest hit I've ever seen, but I didn't click on the link, so you'll have to do that for me. I'm afraid, you know, what might come up if we click on the link. All right, now let's get out of here. Champaign Valley game night coming up next for intern.
Devin.
And intern.
Jordan.
And intern.
That's it.
That's it. For Brady, Rich, Arnie, right here on 103 ESPN.
If it has to do with sports, we're talking about it. WCPV, Essex, Burlington, Plattsburgh. The Sports Station, 101.3 ESPN.
Roger Goodell, he'll be the commissioner of the NFL for at least five more years than his original deal. 2024 for Goodell now, and he's going to make more than $40 million a year. It sounds like details of the agreement are still coming out. The Celtics, they're playing tonight, 7 o'clock. You can hear it on 960 The Zone. They're taking on the Dallas Mavericks. That game at home, the Seas will be without forward Marcus Morris, which will impact the team's bench scoring ability. He's dealing with a knee issue right now, says head coach Brad Stevens. Remember, Morris missed part of the early season and all of training camp with a similar injury as well. The Patriots will play without Rob Gronkowski this week, so tight end Jacob Hollister was a popular man at Patriots Media Day. Chris Hogan returned back to practice today for the Pats as well. Unsure if he'll be able to play on Monday night. Our ESPN NFL insider Field Yates told us he is not sure, again, if Hogan will be able to play, but it sounded unlikely from our talk with Yates. If you missed any of those interviews with Amani Toomer, Buster Olniff, or Yates, you can find them online at 101.3ESPN.com. Champlain Valley Game Night is next on 101.3 ESPN.